I don't know whether you noticed in Tuesday's newspaper or not, there was a little story about a Japanese lady who owns a dog that is 25 years old. And it said this Yumiko Shinohara is her name. She has been working on getting this dog listed in the Guinness Book of World Records as being the oldest dog in the world. I don't know about you, but I thought to myself, well, she better hurry up. Why? How long does a dog live, usually, on average? To be about 10 years old? So if you've got a dog that's 25, that is absolutely amazing. The article went on to say that the dog that was known to have lived the longest was thought to have lived 29 years and 5 months. Whoa. But what is it that we know about a dog? Sooner or later, the dog is going to die. Someday, it's going to die. Just like you and just like me. Did you know that one mark of a mature human being is that he or she comes to accept his or her own death? That it's a fact. That it is going to happen. It's one of their very important emotional and mental and spiritual tasks that you have in life as a human being to realize, hey, someday I'm going to die. Big deal. Everybody dies. When you get to thinking about it, that's not really alarming or absolutely scary. And I think that most people come to a healthy awareness of this in their lives. The few times that I've ever met, I've met a lot of old people in my life. I really have. And most of them can talk about their own death very easily, just the fact that they're going to die someday. The rare times that I've met an old person who was just scared, hadn't dealt with it, hadn't come to terms with it, didn't seem to have thought about it, I've thought to myself, what's wrong here? You haven't dealt with this? You haven't figured this out? You haven't come to grips with it? My goodness, by the time you reach middle age, whenever middle age might be, you should have done this, should have taken care of this. Not that you're in a hurry to die, not that you won't be scared probably when it's approaching or, you know, suddenly have your life threatened. All of us are naturally afraid then, just as natural as it can be. But you're not in a hurry to die, but you know it's going to happen, so you buy life insurance, and you make out a will, and you tell your family what you want done when you're gone, and you tell them what songs to sing at your funeral, and, you know, you just do it. That's the way it's going to be. I know a long time ago, my wife and I were talking about, something could happen to one of us. It happens in life. And I might die before she does. And I said, if I should die, I really want you to remarry. You know, feel free to remarry. It's silly for you to go through life being alone, you know, without a partner like that. I want you to remarry. And Debbie quite clearly said, I won't. I won't get married again. And I said, no, really, I think you should. I would want you to. And I kept persisting, and she kept persisting. And finally, she said to me, well, look, when you've had the best husband in the world, you just couldn't settle for anything less. And I said, oh, honey, now I see what you mean, and I understand. She either said something like that, or she said, haven't I had enough aggravation for one life? And I ask you, dear people, which of those two things do you think she said? I knew you could stand beside me, Ron, and back me up, buddy. And he went with aggravation. No, seriously. When it comes up now and then, Debbie and I talk about how someday one of us or both of us are going to die. It's a fact of life. In his Renaissance essays, a man named Michael Montaigne advises that we should make friends of death. He had an awful lot to say about death, but he said some things like this. We should stare at death. We should think about death. We should not delude ourselves into thinking that death will never make our acquaintance, because, as we all know, it will. And he says if we think about death regularly, death would then be robbed of its power over us. You know, and it's probably good advice. They say the one way to overcome your worst fear is to face that fear. To go out and do it, look at it, confront it, whatever it might be. Perhaps you've heard of somebody who's about 50 years old refer to themselves as being middle-aged. You know, if you do the math, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So are you going to live to be 100? Okay, great. You're middle-aged. But did you know that far more people die before the age of 50 than die after the age of 50? Some of the greatest people who have ever walked this earth died in their early 30s. People like Alexander the Great, people like Mozart, people like Edgar Allan Poe, and of course, the one we get together and talk about every Sunday, Jesus Christ, was only 33. We can know that a long life doesn't matter as much as the guarantee of a good life. A good life is what's really important. We can try to forget death. We can try to ignore it. We can try to put it aside. We can resolve not to think about it. But that in no way affects the power of death. It's there anyway. Death has inevitability on its side. And it's going to catch us, whether we are thinking about it or whether we're trying to ignore it. Now, Montaigne says, where death will meet us is uncertain. Therefore, look for death everywhere. That can sound a little bit morbid, but what he's trying to say is, that way we will not be scared to death of death. He said, look for it. That sounds an awful lot like John Wesley. John Wesley, the great Methodist leader, he bragged on the early Methodists. He said, our people know how to die well. The early Methodists would joyfully record and even create magazines and publish them, the accounts of a good death of this brother or that sister. Christians who had so thoroughly engaged the Christian life and lived so well that they experienced a good death, as they said. Now, we're talking about this because in the 7th chapter of Luke, as Brett read for us just a little while ago, there is this drastic, dreadful encounter with death. By who? This widow. She'd already lost her husband to death. Now, what does she lose in the 7th chapter of Luke? Here she is living in the little village of Nain, and lo and behold, her son dies. Not just one of her children, her only child, her only son dies. In that society, in that day, in that time, where does it leave her? Is there a welfare state? Is there Social Security? Is there any kind of safety net at all? Nope. This lady is on her own. Widows are powerless. She's sunk. She's not only grieving for her son that anybody would, as a mother would for her child, but now she is left high and dry too. Now, a philosopher like Montaigne might urge this widow to accept her situation stoically and resign herself to the inevitable. Her son's death, that means that she will soon die also, because she's so dependent on a son for survival. Things look terrible and despairing until somebody shows up, and he changes things drastically. And that someone is Jesus. Just by showing up, this march toward death is stopped. Jesus enters, and that corpse rises, and death is defeated, and this dead young man is given back alive to his grieving mother. And her grief gives way to great, great joy. There is a future beyond death when Jesus Christ is on the scene. Isn't that what the Bible's telling us? Right? Luke says that the bystanders all saw this and they just praised God. And they said, God has looked favorably upon his people. And you and I look upon Jesus Christ and we know and realize the same thing and says, isn't God good to move beyond death and give us this and give us life? You see, we don't deal with death by philosophizing about it or coming up with mental games to counter it. Even as brilliant as Montaigne was in dealing with this thing, you know, that just doesn't cut it. Death is countered by the one who's resurrected himself, who defeated death, who rose to new life. And that just didn't happen at Easter, okay, folks? It happens every Sunday. It happens every Monday, Tuesday, and every day of the week that Jesus is alive. And he has shown up in your life. Jesus has showed up. Now, that's not enough, though. When he showed up, did you let him in? Did you trust him? Have you made him Lord of your life and put him in charge? That's when Jesus is really alive to you and me. And that's when you really become alive as well. When Jesus shows up, let him in. And you'll live forever. Now, we can't explain that. We can only proclaim it and say that it's true. Jesus has decisively done something about death. Christ is risen, but he's also risen for you and me. Christ has not only done something about death in the past, Christ will do something about death in our future. In just a moment, I'm going to read to you again the scripture that Paul wrote to the Corinthians, and he told them that, you know, when you share the Lord's Supper together, you know what you're doing? You're proclaiming the Lord's death. See, this death is unavoidable, isn't it? But we're moving through it. You keep on doing that, he says, until the Lord comes. How is it possible for the Lord to come again? Well, he's alive. And this is going to help remind us that we're alive too.